Good morning. Coffee on.
What? Oh, when did you wake up?
Oh, just a few minutes ago. What you got there?
Nothing, just a story I'm working on.
Ooh, is this the Layla Miller Detective Agency thing?
No, this one is actually an original story I've had in the works for a while. It's taking some inspiration from Lord of the Rings and then introducing a world full of dragons, magic, and then there's th these three elves that are stuck in the middle of a war between species. It's based off my D&D campaign.
Ooh, I'd never take you as a bit D&D player. We should roll dice together sometime. Well, I'm glad that you're making a breakthrough. Last we spoke about it, you were still having a tough time with original fiction. I guess it just takes a single idea to make a creative damn break. So, Mike tells me you made him cookies.
Mike, the easiest way to get something you want from him is through his stomach.
Buttering up the boss man, eh?
Trying to talk my way into getting to review certain episodes.
Cool. Spoken to Brian recently.
Define recently.
Since about 6 p.m. last night.
No, why?
Just a warning. He watched Back to the Future, and now he won't shut up about something he's calling the omni-threaded multi-dimensional theory. Did you know that apparently, according to Brian, there are an infinite number of different dimensions?
How interesting.
Nah. Well, he talked my ear off about it for a good 3 hours last night, so do not let him corner you. All right? Anyway, I'm gonna go and prepare before we gotta record today's episode. I'll see you in a few.
Oh, Brian's on to me. I need to come up with a plan. Quickly.
And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Voices from the Grid. I am the White Ranger, Michael, joined by the Blue Ranger, Brian.
Hey, everybody, what's going on?
The Red Ranger, Sasha.
The fabulous, the snarky, the ever amazing.
And Mr. Black Ranger, Mr. Ben Taylor.
It's me, your boy, the man who can vanish a Sharpie marker.
Where did it go?
I am so impressed.
My God.
Sasha, any thoughts on that? It's gone.
Nope.
So today we're doing The Wedding, three-parter. Before we hop into this, opening thoughts from everybody before we go into this.
For what?
For The Wedding. Before I hop into this and go talking for like maybe 5 minutes straight.
Oh, now you give us the opportunity to speak our minds for the in your mind segment.
I think we're gonna get
Can we beat him with a stick.
I think we're gonna get differing opinions on this one.
Probably.
Be interesting to see.
All right. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the wedding, a.k.a.
We're totally not in Australia filming UV. No, sir. No, sir. No, we're not. No, we're not. No.
And with that, it's everyone's favorite segment, In My Mind, the quick run through of the weddings. At Angel Grove High School, Mr. Kaplan makes an announcement. And the Rangers are going to be off to Australia for a teen exchange program. Zed is going to take a nap to recharge his evil energies. And meanwhile, Rita's back and she's plotting. Sightseeing montage in Australia with the Rangers in Bulk and Skull. And Zed goes Betty by and Rita has landed and is sneaking about. And Finster's back. Best henchman of them all. And he helps Rita grow back to normal. And then Rita wants a love potion for Zed. At the command center, Alpha is out for a walk and he makes flowers grow and gets overridden by Finster. Alpha shuts down Zordon and tells the Rangers to morph and go to Angel Grove. Despite hesitation, they morph and teleport to a creepy house slash theater. Finster makes Rita look younger and gives her the love potion. Rita gives Zed the love potion while he sleeps and Finster making monsters again. At the theater, the Rangers encounter the monsters, and it's past monsters. The Rangers can't summon their weapons or teleport out, which then brings us to part two, which we begin at the theater without their weapons. The Rangers still attack the monsters, and the monsters spill the beans, and the Rangers learn that Zed and Rita are getting married. Zed wakes up and proposes to Rita. Goldar is the worst man. At the theater, the Rangers are looking for an alternative exit. Goldar plotting against Rita, and the Rangers find a way out of the theater. Zed makes two of the monsters grow, and it's Thunder Megazord time, along with the White Tiger Zord. But while the Rangers had the monsters on the ropes, Alpha cut off the power to the Zords, then sends the Rangers back to the theater. And it's wedding time. Which brings us to part three. At the command center, corrupted Alpha is gleeful about what he's done. The wedding begins as Rita comes down the aisle and Finster does the services and Rita and Zed are now married. And it's party time with Jewish wedding music. At the theater, the Rangers fight off putties and the monsters and it's honeymoon time in Serpentera. The Rangers escape again and are chased by a lot of the monsters. At the command center, Billy fixes Alpha and gets Zordon back. The Rangers get back to action and it's Zord time and just epic monster destruction. And then back in Australia, the Rangers get back to it. And that...
It being...
Whatever they're supposed to do in Australia.
Shopping by Old Hold.
Yeah. So with that, that is the wedding, a.k.a.
Wait, what? It's like they have that whole bit where they're like shopping, which is what they're doing. And then like, they're given 2 hours to shop, but that 2 hours is not elapsed by the end of the three-parter.
See, that's what you noticed. My thing was that they're like, oh, we don't have a lot of time. We're on a tight schedule. Here's 2 hours to shop.
Right.
Yes, but this is Kimberly, so she's going to have scheduled time to shop.
But indeed. It wasn't Kimberly who said the schedule part. It was the teacher person.
Kimberly willfully just was like, oh, shopping time? Yes, absolutely.
Like, that's all she could think about at the beginning of the episode.
Before this part.
She's a girl.
She's a girl in the 90s who likes pretty things.
Yeah. And this will tie into the next episode, believe me.
When we get back to in time in Return of the Green Ranger, the very first thing she tries to tell a person from the 1700s is, you should see the makeup at the mall.
We'll get there. And I also, one of the things I loved about them trying to tell us, yeah, you're in Australia, is, hey, look, here's the Sydney Opera House in every other shot. Because it's kind of like the Statue of Liberty, I guess. It's like, yeah, when you think of Australia.
Yeah, it gets transported to Corinth as well.
It's iconic. Here's the thing. My part was like, oh, they're going to Australia. And then the entire time we don't see a single chaperone or teacher until that 2 hour shopping time marker. I'm like,
they're having a business brunch at the very beginning. I'm like, these are high schoolers.
Mm-hmm. I don't forget, I used to work with high schoolers on as a tour guide in DC. So like,
these are high schoolers who are getting flown to Australia on someone else's dime.
Must be
anyway,
nice.
Let's get to Mike's questions.
All right, we begin with the first question, which involves Australia. The Rangers, along with Bulk and Score, are sent to Australia to represent the United States as teen exchange speakers. Because I definitely think of Bulk and Skull as speakers for a teen exchange.
That's what they're talking about.
Yep. Obviously, this was a cover-up. Obviously, this was a cover-up due to the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie being made at the time in Australia.
No, sir.
But what dynamic do you feel this brought to the show itself by taking the show out of Angel Grove for a little bit?
Except they come back to Angel Grove, so...
Other than a distinct lack of interior shots starring the main six actors, it didn't really change the dynamic of the show at all.
No.
And the show is still paced the same. It's still written the same. It's still... It just... There's less interior shots.
Yeah.
So with that, real quick, Brian...
Yeah.
Our Sentai guru. The theater is actually from Kaku Ranger, which is the first time that we actually see a lead up going into the next season, which has never been done in this is only the second season, but it had usually never been done before. Tell us a little bit.
All right, so yeah, this was footage from Kaku Ranger, which I believe was the 18th Super Sentai season, and it is kind of cool that we do get footage from a next season, because like everybody knows at this point, the footage that we're using is Dire Ranger. Had you told me that, because the thing is, I haven't gotten to that point in Kaku Ranger yet where we see this mansion. So had you told me that this was actually like stock footage from, I don't know, maybe Die Ranger, possibly. I wouldn't have known, because it's cool that we get Conquer Ranger footage, but it's also just a mansion. But it's still cool to see that. I kind of put a note in my thing here where I was like, you know, this looks like it could have literally just been the set from Big Bad Beetleborgs on the outside. Because it looks like the mansion where, what was it, you know, Liberace Jay Leno lived. I can't remember, what was his name, Furbus? I can't remember. Anyways, not important. But yeah, it's cool that we get that footage. And I wasn't aware that they were that far behind production of the Sentai that they were on. They were like two shows ahead, maybe. So.
Yeah. Going into Lord Zedd's recharge, at the beginning of part one, Lord Zedd notes his disappointment in needing to go in for a recharge of his evil energy just as the Rangers were leaving Angel Grove for Australia. This also made Zedd vulnerable as well, being how he was in a deep sleep. What are your thoughts on Zedd's necessity to do this recharge?
By the power of plot convenience!
Yeah. I dug it.
It's a really interesting
wrinkle in who Zedd is. The issue is it comes out of nowhere. It's not set up previously. It's not written into like the previous two or three episodes, like, oh, Lord Zedd's regeneration cycle is coming up or whatever, right? It's just suddenly out of nowhere. He's like, well, gotta go shut down for an hour, right? Like,
gotta take that power nap.
Yeah, right. That's effective. And you then have this weird dichotomy where, like, he and Rita are in bed together. Right? Like, you actually see, like, them talking about waking up together in the morning. And you, see, like, in Turbo? When Divatox calls Rita?
Yeah.
I'm like, so what's he doing there? Like, French bread? Like...
It's funny because he's literally got an eye mask on and he's like snoring. Yeah. So it's like, I thought he only had to charge up every like 1,000 years or something. I guess he got a new battery, which Serpentera needs too, by the way.
Yeah.
Because it still runs on dial-up.
So but yeah, it's just it's a really interesting thing that if they'd made more, and at this point, as I think I've made abundantly clear, especially with Mighty Morphin, at least long-term plotting is things that other shows do. All it would have taken is a single line in like each of the three episodes beforehand, right? Even maybe going back to the power transfer, right? Like when he like when Serpentera uses up all its energy, he could have been like, if only like reminds me, I need to get my 1,000-year nap in soon, right, or something, right? Like. Or, like, why did Serpentera run out of energy, Zordon? Oh, much like Zed himself, blah, 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 blah. Like,
I like that.
It just takes, like, a couple of lines in an episode. But while it's a very interesting conceit, it's badly executed.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, it's also kind of the thing that we learned when we did our last group episode, when we were talking about the Simon Bennett interview, about how Saban himself, how he wanted the show to be. Like, this is one of the last times you get so many multi-parters in a season, because that's just not how Saban liked having the show.
Right, but that doesn't explain.
And he didn't want that long-term continuity. He just wanted, here's the episode.
All right, then, so how do you explain the 7-part Green No More arc and the 7-part New Ranger arc and the 5-part Green with the Evil arc?
I think this season was the one exception.
Except two of the things I just named are in this season.
That's what I'm saying. I think this is the season that was the exception.
Then if it was the exception, why has it not happened here?
I don't know. Like there is a lot of things, and I think also the fact that this was done in Australia, this one I think was the one 3-parter that was planned in Australia. The next episode that we do later on, which is the Return of the Green Ranger, that was apparently not supposed to take place in Australia. That was because the movie ran over on production, right. So they still had to shoot the show in Australia. So I think some of it kind of got.
I'm sorry, I've got to stop you.
Go for it.
Geographical location does not make up for poor writing.
Especially
when the writers are still in America.
Oh no, I agree.
Guys, let Brian make his point, please.
So going off of what Ben said, which I agree with, by the way, I agree with what he said about there should have been some kind of narrative, you know, like a little thing in like an episode or two prior. We literally had an entire like first like 10 something episodes of this season where they literally go, oh man, the Green Ranger's losing his powers. What's going to happen? They could have easily just put in a little bit of something with Zed and been like, oh, I need to recharge. And like me, it would have been interesting for me too, because then Zordon, you know, because supposedly they can kind of spy on each other. Zordon could have been like, hey guys, Zed's going to sleep for a little bit. We should plan around that, you know? So
thank you, Brian. That leads to my point, which is like, ah, yes, Zed is taking a nap where he's very clearly vulnerable. We are going to use this as not an opportunity to, you know, do anything counteractive against Zed. We're going to go to Australia for vacation.
Yeah. Give him the coup de grace.
Like, imagine if you will, right, that starting with, let's just say, power transfer, right? Over the course of the episodes between the power transfer and the wedding. So that's how many episodes?
It's
like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 11, 12, so 12 episodes.
So gradually over those 12 episodes, Zed's monsters are getting weaker and weaker. Right? Mm-hmm. All the time. And he's saying, why are the Rangers defeating my monsters so easily? And Goldar's like, Master, remember, you have to blah, 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 that kind of thing. And Zed keeps pushing it off until like the last moment, right? Until he's just like, right, fine. Bah. And that way it's not, doesn't come off as like a planned thing, which is when they could, when the Rangers could plan around it. Instead, it just so happens to coincide with the fact that they're already leaving, right? Like,
yeah. You know what would have been really cool? If Zed had found out that, like, you know, his monsters are losing power, so he goes for one really big final push before he has to recharge, and it really just takes everything out of him. So, like, he's got one monster, and he's like, I'm going to put everything into this monster. And then he's literally, like, hanging off of the balcony looking at Earth like, oh, God, that was probably a mistake. And that kind of leads into why he has to take a nap.
Or, as a point I have a little bit later that I can bring up now and save bring it up when we do other points, is I've always had a question with this episode about every other time we've seen Rita's dumpster, someone else has to open it.
Right.
Right? How does she get out of the dumpster? Right? What if he puts everything into this one shot, right? And he doesn't know why he's getting weaker. And he calls Rita back to be like, okay, what did you do to me? Right? Like, and that's how you reintroduce Rita, and that's when you do the love story, right?
Instead of her randomly appearing out of nowhere after being sent to the far reaches of the galaxy.
Yeah, and now apparently being able to steer the dumpster.
Right? Where did that come from? Did I miss the joystick?
Yeah. I'm suddenly Carla Perez.
But one of the things, though, is that, like, you noted, like, since when can Rita open up her dumpster? They actually alluded to that in... Actually, she was able to open up her own dumpster when Bulk and Skull were trying to break into it.
No, because you see, earlier in the episode, they've succeeded in opening the dumpster, and she closes it again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
So, but yeah.
So they broke the magical seal for her.
Oh, no, they broke the seal.
And speaking of Rita, what a great segue right there. Rita's return and plan. Rita's back. She's got a plan to marry Lord Zed. With the help of the returning Finster, Rita looks to make Zed her slave by making him fall in love with her and marry her. When you look at Rita's plan, what are your thoughts on this? Sasha's kind of cringing a little bit.
Why didn't she just kill him? I know this is a kid show, okay, but...
You obviously have not heard a lot of stuff that Ben has said about what, like, Rita and others should do to the Rangers.
You have access to their house. Right? Murder them in their sleep.
No, I said the same thing. I say the same thing a lot in my episodes. But, like, legitimately, though, her plan is I'm going to get myself to look all cute and young again. Yay, because, you know, different actress, obviously. And they did a half decent job at sort of hiding her face and reusing old stock footage. So I'll give them credit for that. Even though you can clearly tell that there's a very, there's a gradient difference between the shots of Rita hiding her face and hugging Finster to her approaching Finster's workshop as the original actress.
Finster's missing his blue band in the original footage, in the Sentai footage. He's got the band on.
Yeah. Geo Ranger.
Nice catch. So what I'm saying then is she goes through this elaborate plan to make Zed fall in love with her, which works too well to the point where I think she gets high off the same magic juice, love potion number 9 shtick. Because it seems like it starts off as like a, like you can, like, yes, have him fall in love with you and then kill him and take over, like, or just kill him in his sleep and save yourself all of this effort, or get rid of him, put him in a body bag and send him to the moon. But something that is interesting,
he's already on the moon.
Okay, send him to Mars, send him to some other reaches of the universe, we'll come back and just
send him to one of Saturn's moons.
Actually, sending him to the other side of the moon would, I think, work better, because he'd have a harder time coming back than if she sent him to the other side of the universe, clearly. But something else to note is during Zed's nap, he's got this like disc on the top of his head.
Yeah.
Is that familiar to anybody else?
I've seen that in Spencer's before.
It reminded me of the Borg a little bit in Star Trek because they have their regeneration chambers, right?
We are the Borg.
You will be assimilated. Resistance is futile. So, like, it reminded me a little bit of that. So I thought it was actually kind of funny because Zed is sort of human, but sort of not. I don't know. So, and we find out eventually how Zed is sort of human, sort of not. But the idea, like, it's an overly convoluted plan, and it obviously clearly backfires because at some point, I think Zed ends up roofing her after she roofies Zed, and it's all they sort of fall in love with each other anyway.
So we know that Rita is Zed's ideal woman.
Yeah, this is true.
Right? No, we do. There was Kimberly in Beauty and the Beast that when he's going to make his own bride. She looks just like Rita, right? We also know that there comes the moment that when they remove the love potion, he's still in love with her, right? Like, and I have in my notes that I would be very surprised if this wasn't where if it was any other TV show. If this is where the writers wanted to be all along. But again, long-term storytelling is something other shows do. I think the whole thing with Rita, because she has all these plans, right? Where she's gonna make him fall in love with her, and then she's gonna take over, and she's gonna like rule the galaxy with him, and blah 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 blah. And then she does that. But then she doesn't follow through on any of it. So I think it's kind of an excuse. I think she just wants to marry him.
Aww.
But she doesn't know. Like, it's that it's that kid's mentality of like, if you pull a girl's hair, you like him, right? Like, well, that's what people think, right? Rita's not someone who knows how to express affection. Right, except for everyone except maybe Finster, right?
He did hug him.
She doesn't know how to express affection and stuff like that. And I think this is just her excuse for just being like, what's the evilest way I can marry someone? Mind control.
On a slight side note, but I just realized, how did Rita know it was time for Zed's 1,000-year nap? Did she have a calendar in that dumpster along with steering powers?
After 10,000 years, I finally learned to drive stick.
I have an evil PDA with all my dates in it.
Yeah, she's got a reminder set up on her iPhone.
Yep. She has a calendar on the eastern side of the circular dumpster.
So it's like, it's got like... Monday, shopping. Tuesday, laundry. Wednesday, Zed's 1,000-year recharge. Thursday, Diva Tox's baby bash.
Saturday, scrub inside of dumpster.
Yeah.
There you go.
Get dumpster detailed.
It's filthy in here.
No, I like that idea, Ben, that Rita, to some extent, actually liked Zed and vice versa. I think there's some basis of it in canon, like you mentioned, and it's not outside the realm of possibility. I think it certainly explains their ultimate ending at the very, very, very end of In Space as well.
Yeah.
Some form of affection there, and I have a comment in part about that. When we get to the actual wedding of them, that part of the conversation. But
I have a whole section of notes here about them having kids. That's going to come up in Return of the Green Ranger. So, but yeah, I'm just convinced that Rita liked them anyway and just didn't know how to express herself. So she's like, what's the, and maybe to Rita, that is expressing herself. She's like, I am, like, she's kind of supposed to be one of these embodiments of evil, right? Which I'll get to as a theory when we talk about In Space in like four seasons. But like each of the members of the Alliance of Evil represent a different kind of evil, right? And it's just like,
okay, then along those lines, did the love potion even work? Because Finster has a line at some point where he's like, I don't even know what I mixed in there.
Exactly. In Green Ranger, in Return of the Green Ranger, when he mentions to her about having kids and she's like, nah, and he's like,
I don't know. I have new type of bat, Sharpie ink, and copious amounts of Colt 45.
Coming, my queen. I wonder how much the love potion did, but something I wanted to bring up is, you know, Rita gets a makeover, and one of the first things Zed says when he wakes up is like, how have I never seen your beauty before? Like, he mentions her beauty, and I feel like maybe that's what it was. It wasn't the love potion. It was Zed literally going like, whoa, you're hot. Like, I don't know. Because
I mean, they did kind of get married quickly, so maybe the love potion worked enough to sort of like,
right,
lower Zed's inhibitions a little bit.
I think what it was is what was there was love in potentia. It's like a big ball at the top of the hill, right? Something's got to start the ball rolling down the hill.
Yeah.
And that's what I think the potion was, is it was just kind of the kickstarter to everything. Yeah. Right? They were, yeah, at least on Zed's side of things, right? Like, he would never have thought to, like, he probably didn't even do the math about the whole Kimberly thing, or like, he probably was just like, oh, whatever. Like,
I need a wife. As long as she's wearing this outfit, it's fine.
Yeah. She needs to wear the Madonna thing.
Yeah, maybe he's just into, he thought he was just into the outfit. Right?
But Rita has more to this plan, and is to actually trap the Rangers as a present for Zed. And that is where Alpha comes in. And with the Rangers gone, Zed taking his nap, Alpha feels the need to take a walk to calm the circuits because he's really nervous about this. This ended up being a mistake, as Finster and the Putties would grab Alpha and put a disc into him to make him work for Rita. I just have to admit, I like the snarkiness that we got out of Alpha. So I have to ask, how awesome was it to see Alpha actually show some attitude?
I have two opinions on this.
Go for it.
One, I loved it, just because it made Zordon look like a complete tool. Two, I hated it. Why? Because I'm 90% sure this is why we ended up with the Jive talking outfit in Turbo.
Oof. That's.
I can see that. I can actually see that now.
Oh God, yeah. that puts.
But
that
but there, but I will say this though, this Alpha had the right type of attitude compared to the Jive talking when we end up getting a Turbo.
It's sort of like, you know that meme where it's like, upgrade, no go back? This is the thing. We wanted snarky, sarcastic Alpha, and we got that. But yeah, to Ben's first point is, I loved it. I was like, this is literally centuries of pent-up aggression just being released.
Like, yeah.
I can totally see Alpha being frustrated and just like ignoring the emotional aspect of it in order to like not express those emotions. But this disc sure made him like work for evil, but it also like just anything that was holding him back was sort of nullified by this, like, I don't work for you now, I work for evil. Like, go jump off a cliff. Oh, wait, you can't. You're up hiding in a tube.
Yeah.
Now imagine what happens when he gets locked up in a box for at least 10 years.
Oof.
That's his problem.
When I was researching this.
His fault.
I said it's his problem, not that it's his fault, but it also doesn't make any sense.
Yes, it doesn't make any sense. You are correct. But...
And, like, which alpha even is it? Is it the original Zordon's alpha? Is it the alpha that... you know what? Can we just move on, please? Moving on.
The less we have to say about Operation Overdrive, Brian, the better.
Please, continue.
Brian, thoughts?
So, one of the things I saw on... notes is that Richard Horvitz, who is the voice for Alpha 5, loved this episode because it allowed him to just kind of cut loose. And I'm like, I can see that, because you can only go for so many times before, like, you got to do something else with the role, right? And I kind of loved it. I just hate that, like, the only thing I hate is that Alpha is so vulnerable. It's like someone needs to put something on his, like, disk drive that locks him out, because this is, like, what, the second time that this has happened to him? Third?
Yeah.
Second time. Yeah, it's ridiculous. So.
Rule of thumb, Alpha, don't leave the command center and don't let other things into the command center, but.
How many times do we have to teach you this lesson, old man? You know, it's like, so. Yeah.
Another thing that not a lot of people take away from Alpha's walk that I've not seen anyone else talk about ever. Alpha can tap into the morphing grid and create life.
Yeah, I did note that in my quick walkthrough that he made flowers grow.
He can directly create matter.
And that matters.
And it'll never be mentioned again.
Thank you, Sasha.
Yeah.
Just keep it with consistency. Yeah.
So next up, we got the wedding, which I'll admit, it was awkward.
I disagree.
Really awkward.
I loved it.
Let me put it in perspective like this. The awkwardness was the very beginning where they had, like, all the monsters just kind of walking in. That was the more awkward part. The rest of the stuff wasn't so awkward.
Couldn't disagree more.
That's fine. We're cool with that. But Zed sure does know how to throw a party, as we have noted in Zed's monster mash and stuff like that. When you see Rita and Zed, we have Finster be the master of ceremonies, and after the party, Rita and Zed leave on Serpentera to watch the Rangers be defeated. This doesn't go according to plan, but shows us what the dynamic we're going to get between Zed and Rita. What are your thoughts on their dynamic together?
Who's going first?
Brian can go first.
It shows us, it definitely shows us how they're going to work moving forward. Having been rewatching these episodes, and because again, I watched these all as a kid, and rewatching them now, it's more noticeable now going forward how much they nerfed Lord Zed's character by making him a married man and kind of, I wouldn't say taking away his backbone, but definitely making him a little more like, yes, my dear.
I have an explanation for that.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily agree with that point, and I don't think Ben does either. So, Ben, why don't you go first, and I will explain the...
Okay.
Tell me, Brian.
Yes.
At what point when she was working solo, did Rita destroy the power coins?
Did she destroy the power? I don't recall that she did that.
She didn't.
Yeah.
When he was working solo, at what point did Lord Zed destroy the power coins?
I believe when he first showed up, right?
No.
No.
They're still using the same power coins to morph.
Right.
He blew up some Zords. And even then, he didn't even blow them up. He just damaged them enough that they needed an upgrade.
Right.
Zed and Rita's biggest successes come when they work together. They turn back time. They destroy the command center. They destroy the power coins. They win.
Yeah.
Like, if they don't luck into the Zeo crystal, Zed and Rita win. Right? Forewarning for anyone listening, that's all in season three. But the point being, I don't think they did nerf Zed. Right? No. And I'll let Sasha talk on this a little bit. And then if she doesn't cover my point, I'll come back in with another one.
Okay.
Because I don't want to dominate this. So go ahead, Sasha.
So here's what I will say. One, I don't think they nerfed Zed's character, mostly because Zed's efforts to destroy the Rangers have been pathetic and irritating. And he had some good ideas in the beginning, but very poor execution. And then it just became like, I'm going to do whatever. He basically ended up doing the same thing Rita was doing, which is like using the circumstances of the Rangers' lives to create a monster and blah, 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 blah. Then the Rangers get defeated, or the Rangers would defeat the monster and he'd be cranky and it'd be lather, rinse, repeat. I think the reason people think he got nerfed is because Zed has met his match. But Zed is a very reserved character in a lot of ways, while Rita is a very expressive character. So it ends up coming off how she sort of dominates. It ends up seeming like she's dominating when I don't think she does. And I agree with Ben's point that they do work well together.
Right.
Ben, why don't you finish your thought? Because there's another point that I want to make about the wedding that is...
Okay. My thought is, as I'm pretty sure I'm the only one in this call that's actually married.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's kind of the thing you do for your spouse. You say yes to them because you want them to be happy. It's not nerfing someone. It's just changing an outlook.
Right. And part of why I say that is because I do feel like they did introduce Rita, one, because she proved to be a popular character, but also mainly because I remember reports where everybody was like, oh, kids are scared of Lord Zed. They need to like tone him down a little bit. What's the best way to do that? Make him a husband or something. Which I was never scared of Lord Zed. I thought he was the coolest thing since sliced bread. I thought he was awesome as a kid.
I wasn't personally. Either. I also don't like the idea that like, I think it continues the idea of that, like, you know, you get married and the old ball and chain nonsense.
Right.
That like, oh, because a person gets married, they are fundamentally transformed as a person in general, which is not like, yeah, you make changes in your life and everything, but you as a person do not change. You're just in a new circumstance and hopefully for the better. I just have one question about all of this, particularly the wedding. Why is Hava Nagila playing at their wedding? No, y'all. Okay, it plays for like for over a minute.
Oh yeah.
Okay, I was like, at first I was like, wait, there's no way I'm hearing this. I rewound it, called my brother into the room. I said, tell me when you hear it, and he goes, what the heck? So I ask you, my friends, is this the beginning of the real Jewish overlords? And I'm making that joke. Let me preface this, because I'm Jewish and I can get away with it because the idea is funny to me. But realistically, why is Hava Nagila playing at their wedding?
More importantly, is Lord Zed circumcised?
I don't want to know the answer to that question.
I mean, considering how little skin he has left, probably. Good Lord.
Good luck sleeping tonight.
Yeah. That's his whole problem. It's a circumcision gone wrong. I actually had a note in here. I was like, is he going to like step on a glass? And is he also going to be lifted up in a chair at any point by the monsters? I don't know. Like, I'm not Jewish, but I've Jewish friends. I've been to a Jewish wedding before. I know how things go.
I've been bar mitzvahed. I've heard that song numerous times.
My family and, you know, grew up in Europe and the Soviet Union. Like, this is like one of like the same three songs that are played on repeat at every like East, like every time Soviet Jews or post-Soviet Jews get together, this is what is played. But I just like, these are like, to me, that just plays on the silliness of this whole thing. And that makes Rita and Zed even less intimidating than I already thought they were. Especially because later on, they end up bickering like an old Jewish couple. It's sort of like, so how long have you two been married? Oh, we've been married for centuries. In all that time, did you ever think about getting divorced? Homicide, yes, but divorce, never. Like,
it's like, just, it's hilarious to me that the honeymoon's over at the end of the episode. It's like, wow, that didn't take long at all.
For Jewish husbands, there is no end. There is no honeymoon. There's only suffering. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my God.
I'm just kidding. I literally like this is why they should not have put this song in here, because they did this to themselves and they're opening me up to all sorts of humor.
Yeah. I think it's great that it's there personally.
It's hilarious. I just don't get why.
Like, I'm gonna be really honest with you. I like the whole wedding sequence. From the slight little rewording of things, right? Like, there's a bit where, like, Squat's like, I'm going to be the flower monster, and Babu's like, I'm going to be the monkey of dishonor or whatever, right? Like,
yeah.
From the little rewordings of things to the moment where Zed calls in the monsters and talks about them as, like, for today, we're going to be a family. All the way through, I genuinely enjoyed it, right? Which is more than I can say for most of season two. Like, I'll go out on a limb and say these might be the three best episodes in seasons one and two put together, yeah. Right?
Oh, wow.
Like, just because they're very well paced, what happens in them doesn't feel overly forced or out of place or any of that. And it gives us a look into the lives of people who aren't the Rangers. Let's just get a look into the life of Rita and Zed. And it's just cool. It's just a fun little thing. And I don't know.
Something that struck me when I was watching all those scenes with the monsters was, because this was, you know, this was the 90s. And so a lot of those people that had to have been working on this had to have grown up with shows like this before. There was a very Addams Family kind of feel to that.
Yeah.
You know, I absolutely got that feeling, and I kind of loved it. It felt like a little bit of an homage to that. So,
and have to go back to Zed calling in all the monsters, right? The bit that Mike said was really awkward. And Mike, I understand why you feel that way. But I apologize to the audience. I'm trying to find, I hadn't been planning to talk about this. As someone who doesn't really have a blood family, either in the States or by choice, S-
seeing. Oh. Seeing that echoed a lot of what happened at my own wedding. And it was the moment I realized that I could choose my own family. That was my wedding. And that was a huge milestone for me in my life. Like, that was absolutely a turning point. Because I'd been in the US for about 3 or 4 years at that point. And I'd fallen out with my family back home. And I only really have my wife here. Yeah, I have friends, right? But, like, I didn't have any family here. And that, to me, this is way more poignant than I expected to get on this episode. That, to me, it was interesting. It was important, I feel, to show that. Because it showed Zed choosing his family, right? Choosing to bring in people that he wouldn't have before. Or didn't know he could. And sorry, I'll stop derailing the episode.
Yeah, no, it's all right, bud. But this also brings comes to my last question, which is about Goldar's discontent. One of the biggest things that is made known is that Goldar is very upset with Rita's return and tries to sabotage the wedding, as well as root against her in her plans to defeat the Power Rangers. Mm-hmm. He even goes as far as trying to speak up in the wedding to only have Rita pretty much tell him to shut up. How do you feel about having one of the henchmen being one of the more vocal against their masters now?
I mean, Goldar really blatantly and unapologetically was perfectly fine to you know, stand on Zed's side as opposed to, and basically put Rita back in the dumpster. So that to me was not surprising. I think it's surprising to me that he didn't try to do more. Like, if he's so upset and he really wants to mess with the wedding, he doesn't really do anything out of the ordinary or that, you know, that is actually like worthy of a villain. Let's put it that way.
Right.
It's like all this build-up. He's like, oh, Rita's going to do this thing, and it's like, dun-dun, doesn't amount to anything! Right? Like, it doesn't go anywhere, so what's the point?
Exactly.
Ryan?
I will give him this much, like, at the wedding, he, when somebody says, if anybody has any reason why these two should not be joined in holy matrimony, speak now. And he actually says, I object. And it's like, he gets shut down and it all amounts to, you know, a hill of beans, you know? So it's like, it's cool to see that he's like starting to stand up more for himself, at least a little bit, but then like, I don't know. He's kind of just been a cowering, you know, like, oh no, please don't hit me with the whip again kind of guy for a while. So I don't know. I guess I can't recall later on because, excuse me, sorry. I'm having a brain fart here. I feel like had they maintained that, it would have been interesting, but I don't recall that they did.
It's really interesting that he starts standing up for himself, and then 9 episodes from now, he becomes a comedy character alongside Rita Repulsa.
Yeah.
Next season.
Yeah, so with that, my questions are done. Ben, real quick, I got to ask you a serious question.
Ah, yes.
In parts 1, 2, and 3, when did Adam Park appear?
So, the first appearance of the greatest of all time, Adam Park, in part 1. Bear in mind, these times are post-introductory credits. So you have to add like 1 minute and 5 seconds on for the intro credits. Part 1, his first appearance is at 3 seconds, which this is acceptable. In part 2, it is 5 seconds. This also is acceptable. And in part 3, it's 15 seconds. Overall, very good showing. Also another reason why this might be the best two-parter of the first two seasons.
So those extra seconds on episode 3, those aren't detrimental? They don't...
No, because you have to recap what's already happened, right?
Right.
And most of most of the 15 seconds on episode 3 is like an establishing shot of the theater and lightning, right? Like, so it's acceptable.
Yeah.
All right. So with that, I open the floor to all of you.
In fact, it's like once you get past like 1 minute, then it's not okay. All right. Like,
okay.
I will say, while I appreciate the very early on appearances of Adam, I actually do have one sort of issue that I did notice, though. And I think Ben is nodding because he knows what it is. There is a lack of lines for Adam. He's just sort of like Bulk and Skull have more lines in this three-parter than Adam does. And a lot of the lines that he does have are really... It's like they didn't know what lines to give him, so they just gave him some.
Yeah.
Reactionary.
Yeah, they're very generic. It would have been... I think actually this gets to sort of one of the one weakness I think of this three-parter is actually the Power Rangers themselves.
Yeah. Which I'm kind of okay with.
I'm okay with that. I'm just saying that like in a show about Power Rangers, it's interesting that in this three-parter, the Power Rangers are the weak points of the episode, which I think makes sense because they're not the focus of this episode.
Yeah.
The focus of the episode is the changing status quo between the bad guys.
Yeah.
It's
kind of like an episode of G.I. Joe that focuses solely on Cobra.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. At the same time, I think they could have done a slightly better job of, if the Rangers are in Australia, like, great, but there is like you're in a new country. Literally, the only thing you want to do is shop. Like, I know that's like one teenager, fine, but the fact that everybody's sort of like, yeah, let's go shopping is like, come on.
I would have been so much more interesting if like they had followed suit with like Survivor and been like, you know, Power Rangers, the Australian Outback. It's like, what could happen out there? It's like
Bulk and Skull had a much more interesting adventure in Australia than the Rangers did. They got to see kangaroos. They got to see the koalas, like...
Which, I would argue, the kangaroos are the scariest thing in this episode because they could literally kill you. they are the most lethal thing in this entire episode.
Agreed.
Ben's raising his hand.
Yes, Ben, please.
Not to derail the debate on the flora and fauna of Australia. But I have a question prior to Australia, if I may.
Right.
By all means.
These kids are going to Australia.
Right.
They're taking a train to the airport.
Uh-huh.
They're taking a plane to Australia.
Uh-huh.
For a week, 2 weeks, maybe, who knows?
Sure.
Why is Ernie the one seeing them off and not their parents?
I'm sorry, they're who now? What's a parent?
We've actually never have seen Rocky, Aisha, and Adam's parents.
Yeah.
We do know
to this point.
We do know about Kim's father, mother, and stepfather. And we know about Billy's parents.
Yeah.
We don't know about Tommy's parents because we actually have not seen Tommy's parents up to this point either.
This is Power Rangers, remember? Tommy doesn't have parents. He's a child of the Morphin Grid, which is why he's the greatest of all time. It's immaculate conception, clearly.
Immaculate Gridception.
Gridception.
But, so...
I mean, he is the greatest of all time to ever do the thing if you listen to Dino Thunder.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little suspicious that at least Kim and Billy's parents could have showed up.
Yeah.
But at least you have somebody.
Guys,
Ernie.
They spent the entire budget of the show to bring everybody to Australia and to house everybody in Australia. So there was no money for a bunch of generic extras with lines. So it was Ernie.
They write the scene differently.
Yeah.
Just start with them on the train.
Or on the plane.
Yeah. My note is on this scene is as follows. I said, and Ernie sees off the Rangers as they go to the airport. That's nice of Ernie. Come to think of it, I'm not certain I've ever seen him outside of the juice bar, but why entered? Maybe this scene was shot in, you know, the Los Angeles area. Nope. Actually,
shot in Australia.
It was shot in Australia, which means that they shipped over Ernie's actor, and then they never used him.
Is he not in the movie?
He's not in the movie.
He's not in the movie.
So he was brought over for this scene.
I'm like, wow.
I'd like to go to Australia, do like 30 seconds of work, and just like hang out.
Hey, I've got 2 weeks in Australia. I don't have to do anything, and it's all on their dime. All right, cool.
Well, yet again, we don't know, like, I mean, we'll get into this when we do the movie, but, I mean, they may have had a plan for Ernie at one point, but then it got written out of the film.
Yeah.
So.
I do know that you do see, and I'm not going to talk about the movie, but just real fast, I do know that you see what is actually a McDonald's now propped up as Ernie's juice bar in the movie, so they probably wanted to have him in there. Yeah. But it's like, how are you gonna, you know, whatever. Anyways, so
yeah.
And then my next point, since we're still not, this is still a point before we get to Australia, is I think we should discuss Bulk and Skull.
Okay.
And the fact that they got chosen to go do this thing, right? It means one of two things. One, they cared enough about something to discuss it and earn themselves a trip to Australia. Mm-hmm. An all expenses paid trip to Australia, if anything, is to go by the fact they're ordering lobster and eating at like 4-star restaurants. And
this is a nice looking restaurant.
It was a nice looking restaurant. Or the way that Principal Kaplan phrases it is Angel Grove High has been selected to go to Australia. So either that or they took the entire school.
How?
Hold on. What in the scene where everybody's the stupid 2-hour shopping spree, there are other students
in
the group. Yeah. So it's possible that like maybe it wasn't the whole school. Maybe like their class was selected because Mr. Kaplan was not exactly specific, and
or those are students from other schools.
Oh, also possible. Good point.
I mean, it could have been something like, "Hey, everybody in grade 11 gets to go on this trip, or like the seniors go, but the freshmen don't get to go." Because God knows that's like, you know,
even like just my mind boggles about how that fits in anyone's budget.
Yeah.
Can I have a geographical clarification, please, if the council will abide. Thank you. The Angel Grove is located in the state of California, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Because I guess I could picture them going, like, there are high schools that do really big senior trips. I know of schools that like send their kids to Europe for 2 weeks on a specialized, like, you know, educational trip that's focused on, you know, going to Poland or some other country, but usually it's very, there's a very specific reason for it. Yeah. It's like tied to a course, or it's tied to like going to DC for civics or something like that.
Right.
The Australia and the Youth Summit just sounds like another peace conference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it is, it's what it is, right? Like, let's be honest.
What the peace conference should have been.
Hey, we need an excuse to get these kids out of California. Okay, cool.
How about, and this is just me spitballing, right? You take the 6 hardest working teams on the planet and you give them a vacation.
Okay, but Bulk and Skull still have to be worked in there.
All right, they win a vacation.
All right, then. Bulk and Skull win. The Rangers get a vacation. I like that.
Damn.
Or you don't have to work Bulk and Skull in there, right? You just use some old stock footage, right? And you have Alpha still teleport them to the Outback.
Can we just talk about Alpha's dialogue in this episode? We talked about how great he was and how nice it was to see him as like this like inhibition lowered character. But there were some lines that he said that were just hysterical that I just like, I couldn't. It was like,
such as
I have written here, this is the new Alpha, big boy.
Yeah.
Oh, he called the Power Rangers power punks. That was one of Alpha's lines, too. Like, Alpha had the catchiest dialogue in the entire episode. I don't know if I have anything else here. I unfortunately do not, but there were a couple of other zingers in Zordon's direction that were on point.
I like the fact that just at one point he just turned off the speaker so Zordon couldn't talk.
Yep, and he's got like Snapchat filters on him and everything.
Yeah, I definitely have the note that Zordon with a flat top is a good look.
Oh god, it was just so funny. And Zordon is like, Alpha, I know you're still in there, and Alpha's just like, I'm gonna turn you off because you're annoying. Which I'm like, Alpha, let's be real, you've been wanting to do this since episode 1, if not before.
So, also, small Bulk and Skull moment. There's a montage of them all when they first get to Australia, and like Bulk and Skull have this small stuffed kangaroo, and there's this moment where Bulk cuddles the kangaroo and looks at it like he would kill anyone that went near it, like he would die for this stuffed kangaroo, and I love it. It's just going to show the change in their characters, really. You know what I mean? Like, oh, Zed's taking a nap, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, oh, now's we go to Australia. Like, a couple of things. One, why can't Goldar just attack while Zed's taking a nap?
Thank you. I have a note about that too.
You have a bunch of putties ready to go.
Just.
And it's not like you need Zed to make a monster. Finster's literally sitting there bored out of his skull.
Yep.
Like.
And my second note is, why does it matter that the teens are going to Australia? They have site-to-site teleportation.
That does raise a question.
Sorry, carry on, Boris.
No, you're fine. I just because they have to go under the skies of, or under the guise of, you know, hey, we're going with, you know, our high school. That, how much does that have to suck? Where you know that you can teleport, but then because
it's like a 12-hour plane ride,
you have to sit on a plane. Oh God, it's like.
You should be like, meet you there.
Yeah. Hey, let's tell you what, we actually
paid for flights on a different airline for us.
Yeah. Yeah, we're special. We got a private jet, so we'll see you there.
Remember,
though. We made a flying car. We're just going to take that.
The flying car. Oh, my, yeah.
Okay, like, but, like, at what speed does the flying car, what's the maximum speed of the flying car?
It has Zor technology in it.
But does it have a bathroom?
No, but what you say you're going to take the flying car, but you teleport there.
You just go out the window.
Okay, so one issue with the teleportation out the window. Is the fact that Zordon tells them not to use their power. Like, there's this implication that they shouldn't use, like, Zordon and Alpha and, like, the command center and their powers for personal gain in any way. It says, like, if you're looking for the Rangers, unless you feel like there's real trouble, you shouldn't, like, call the command center looking for them. Either that, or I'm just projecting something from something else.
That was from Dino Thunder, where, like, Kira's trying to tell everyone about her record deal, and Tommy's like, you should only use the communicators if there's actual trouble.
Oh, that's right. Tommy did say that. All right. So, but there is this implication still, I feel like, in Mighty Morphin that, like, you shouldn't ask, like, you know, these powers are a gift and you shouldn't just use them willy-nilly. And we see that the Rangers do stick with that.
My point, at least, was more, why does it matter that they're in Australia if Zed attacks Angel Grove?
Because they can be teleported back in an instant. Yes.
Then we spin out into a weird
thing. So I brought you all back. So let's see here. About the wedding. I love the fact that the Rangers find out about the wedding and their reaction is basically just like, well, that's weird.
Yeah, and Zordon just is kind of like, oh, anyways.
Yeah, right? Like, the two biggest threats that you have faced are literally joining hands in matrimony and you have zero reaction of like, this could be really bad for us. Maybe we should do something. Nope.
On the bad side of things, that's for certain.
Right, yes. But also, like, Alpha tells them and starts acting really suspiciously. So instead of, like, maybe we should check to make sure everything's okay in the command center, they're just like, we'll trust Alpha, no big deal, even though they're all very suspicious.
It's like MBD.
It's all good.
It happens a couple of times this season where, like, people start acting weird, and in any other season of Power Rangers, they'd be like, oh, it's a spell, or they're acting weird. And then it's just like, whatever. Also, while we're on the subject of Alpha, taking out a disc does not remove the virus that it put in there. That's not how computer science works.
This is how Ranger science works.
1990 society as a whole had a very different idea of how technology worked than we do now. That's true. And even back then, because, like, what was it, when I was in first grade, second grade, I mean, I learned how to type on a Macintosh, for God's sake, but, like,
we all did.
But
actually, no, I self-taught myself, so.
Oh, nice.
I mean, keep in mind, Brian, that one of the biggest plot devices for a lot of things back in the 90s was a floppy disk.
Yes, the good old 3.5. Yep.
The 3.5 floppy disks that weren't actually floppy.
Yeah, they had, yeah. So, I mean...
Why does Alpha bother with Balkan Skull? Like, is he just, like, bored being evil in the command center and cranky because he's invited to the wedding? Like,
be the douche.
He finds them and I'm like, wow, this is more attention than you've ever given to Balkan Skull and will ever give again.
I did appreciate the Tweedledee and Tweedledum and Tweedledummer.
Yeah. So, actually, it's funny you bring that up because, so we were talking about Sasha. I think it was the last episode Sasha and I did that we recorded, and there's a hyena monster, and it came out. The episode came out around the time of Lion King.
Yeah,
and ironically,
now you're going to read the fact off of Ranger Wiki that this came out.
Actually, I don't have Ranger Wiki in front of me. Dumb and Dumber, but Dumb and Dumber, that was actually a reference to the movie Dumb and Dumber. So
I doubt it, but okay.
None of the kids watching the show should have been watching Dumb and Dumber.
I did.
Tweedledum and Tweedledummer is an expression that has existed for longer than the Dumb and Dumber. It just so happened to coincide.
Yeah, it was the coinciding. I mean, normally they would have gone with the Tweedledee Tweedledum thing.
Yeah,
but they went with Dumb and Dumber. But
I'm sorry to say this, but it was super weird to see Rita's lips matching her dialogue. I was so used to it, like, being dubbed. I mean, it's still dubbed, but
it's a little jarring, but it's still English on English.
It's the right mouth shape, at least, right?
I definitely remember seeing in, like, I think it was in the next episode we're going to talk about, where, like, maybe they felt like that was too weird too, because like it looks like the lips don't match necessarily in that one, just a little bit. But yeah, it was weird. It was really weird.
Also, just since we're gonna talk about Rita, when Rita and Zed board Serpentera, they're then we see the shot of Serpentera on the outside.
Oh God, yeah.
With the just married. Can you imagine how big that flag is?
It's hilarious. I loved it. I was like, that is exactly what I wanted to see.
Oh man.
Oh God, it was so funny.
Whatever After Effects studio they used to make that, it's like it didn't blend in at all.
That's what makes it beautiful is the fact that like it was just tacked on there.
It's just like dink.
It was great. I loved it. I have zero qualms. I liked it. Like
it was funny.
Easiness I expect from Power Rangers.
So we've talked a lot about not the Power Rangers. Can we talk a little bit about the actual like theater and the plot there?
Sure.
Interesting idea. Maybe kind of. That there's like a spot on Earth where their powers don't work, and it's kind of hand waved away as to why, right? But it's an interesting idea. Like, their powers can go to other planets and different dimensions and other realities, but there's, like, a theater downtown in Angel Grove that's just, like,
shrug. It's built on a nexus of all realities. Cancel. It's built on the anti-morphing grid. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, Frax showed up from the future and was like, I made the morphing grid according to Boom Studios.
I can't stop. Make it stop. So question, just because my brain might be a little bit fried, but have the Rangers up to this point ever traveled to the command center by foot?
Yes.
So why was this before Tommy? Or was Tommy part of that?
I can't remember.
Because, and this is a very important point, Tommy asks which way to the command center. My question is, shouldn't you know?
If you're lost in amongst a bunch of rocks, like, and I'm not talking about Rocky's brain.
he just wants to have fun, guys. Come on.
I had to sit through that episode,
yeah.
Brian. I will never be the same.
I actually watched it yesterday just so
I'm
I could.
So sorry.
Oh, dear God! I'm sorry. I'm sorry too.
There's also this. I do want to give the writing team some props. The cliffhanger to episode one is very effective. Well, we're stuck in a place. We don't have any powers. We're surrounded by monsters. What do we do now? Like, it's a very effective cliffhanger, right? Mm-hmm. Would have been better if it wasn't resolved literally the next day, but that's just the nature of how they aired Power Rangers back then, right? Like,
I do wish we could have seen the Rangers do more than just like wait it out or try to figure out a new way out. Like, yeah. It would have been cool if they used, like, they do towards the end a little bit, but it would have been cool if they actually used maybe parts of the theater to their advantage somehow.
Yeah.
Or if it was actually a theater.
Wait, yeah, that's right. It was just like a generic mansion looking thing.
It looked like a weird, like, goth Titanic bridge or something. It was like, what? Yeah. Okay. One of my questions too is what?
I just got this image of like in a theater, like having spent like a lot of time in theaters, like the Rangers just home aloning their way through, like dropping sandbags on monsters and dropping monsters through trap doors and like
this is the way.
Closing the curtains literally on a monster. Those things weigh a lot. One of the little things I was kind of confused about, but then I just wrote it off as like, you know, it's just the nature of the writing. And also because we need to have the Rangers without actually having the actors, which is why they're morphed all of episode two. I thought it was weird that like they don't have their powers. They can't call their Zords. They can't call their weapons. And yet they're still in the suits.
I think that was by plot device because Alpha told him to morph before you go in.
Right.
Which is also kind of, but why?
Because I think if you're already morphed going in, you have whatever is available to you.
Ben's losing his mind.
Remember when we were recording the power transfer?
Yes.
And we said, why are Jason, Zach, and Trini still morphed after they transfer powers?
Right.
Because they
like the suits themselves don't use or transfer any actual power.
Oh.
So what you're saying is that Zach just randomly has a Black Ranger outfit just sitting in his closet.
No, what I'm saying is because he was transformed when he transformed his powers. He won't have access to pull the suit to him again, but it's already there.
No. Oh God! Does that mean they have to like unzip and remove the suit the old-fashioned way instead of just
no,
like?
No, it's teleportation out? Or something. I don't know.
Maybe when they got teleported out of the command center and into
they changed they, back. Yeah,
they're in back in their normal clothes.
Sure, we'll go with that.
But the bigger point is if they don't have any powers and they can't summon any weapons and they can't summon any swords, how does Rocky punch the ground and create a localized earthquake?
Right, yeah. That was in my notes too. I was very concerned by that. Well, not concerned, but I was just like...
Unless there was some residual energy in the suit that wasn't somehow nullified because...
Like, Rocky, you not telling me something.
Yeah.
Are you Superman?
He wishes.
Yeah, right.
Super Rock.
This moment where like they run down this secret staircase and they get out through a cave, right? And then they get teleported back in and they're like, how do we get out now? And I'm like, maybe the same way you just did.
And at that point, it's like, well, is Alpha gonna keep doing that though? Or is he...
But he clearly doesn't because they get out again and he's just like, well...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guess they beat me.
Gee, I wasn't expecting you guys to, you know, actually escape the second time. Okay.
Then in episode three, right, they get this thing. They've got, like, the two monsters, right? And they full-on Scooby-Doo the monsters, right, by dropping a net on them.
Oh, my, yeah. Oh,
yes, the power-diffusing monster-trapping net.
Where did they get the net from?
It was conveniently in the basement underneath the theater.
My note literally here was the Rangers have a plan. Aisha is going to give herself up. The two monsters come in and the other Rangers drop a net on them. What in the Scooby-Doo is going on here? you know, Rocky's just going to show up after that and just be like, Roro. like what's going on here?
That confirms even more than Justin and Scrappy do.
It's Justin Power. Oh my God. There was a lot of homages going on in this episode, I think. I think when they were doing this episode, they're like, all right, what did we grow up with? Scooby-Doo, the Munsters, Adam's Family. Let's go with that.
See, I feel like that would have been cool. Like, that would be actually a really cool idea for a Halloween episode.
Yeah.
Where, like, the Rangers are trapped in, like, a mansion, and there's a ghost, and they have to solve the mystery or whatever, and shocker, the bad guys are near or something, I don't know. Yeah. Just be funny. But, yeah. This whole mansion shtick just feels a little bit out of place in an otherwise, like, really creative concept. But I guess they had to figure out a way to still include the Rangers because of reasons.
Since we're on this train of thought real fast, and this is kind of an aside, but it's surprising to me how many properties have, like, crossed over with Scooby-Doo that Power Rangers has never done that. Because they've literally done crossovers with, like, Batman and WWE and stuff like that. And yet,
Brian,
yeah,
don't give them ideas.
All right. The idea is probably already out there. Let's just
don't do it. Don't do it.
It's gonna be the.
Sorry, I still cannot get over Bobby Flay meets the Scooby Gang. Okay.
I'm sorry. What?
Yeah, that's the thing. Look it up, or maybe it wasn't Bobby Flay. Maybe it was Graham.
Gordon Ramsay.
Gordon Ramsay or something like that. Almost like.
Oh my God! If it was Gordon, oh.
Anyway, I'm pretty sure that's also been a thing. So, like, moving back to Power Rangers, though. Yeah. I got nothing. I think I'm all out of notes, but for some reason, instead of writing, Rita and Zed are already having marital problems for some reason. I wrote before I watched Return of the Green Ranger. Okay. I wrote, oh, look, Rita and Zed are already having medical problems. And that's all she wrote. Boys, what you got?
If I could take the floor for just a second here.
You have 1 second.
All right, cool. Awesome. Just talking as a toy collector real fast. There was something that was really cool in this series of episodes. And going back and watching this too, I thought it was really cool. You look at the wedding cake that they have, and atop of that, you know, typically with the wedding cake, you would see like a groom and a wife topper, you know, like a bride topper and, you know, the dress and the tux and whatnot. But for this episode, they not only used a 5.5-inch scale Lord Zed figure, which was out on the market by the time, but they also used a prototype Rita figure, which never got released. And we actually wouldn't get a release of a Rita figure until, I think, Samurai. And even then, that was not that great.
I think it might have been before Samurai, because when they're in between the season, I'm blanking on the season, what was it, RPM or something like that?
Right. Before Samurai, yeah.
Yeah. They did, because there was no seasons for like 2 years, they did the reversions of Mighty Morphin.
Right.
And actually, that's when they're re-releasing toys. Like, that's when Rita came out and stuff like that. So it was like, yeah, it was during that time frame right there.
And I remember that figure being butt ugly anyways. So they were actually going to release a legacy line figure of Rita before Hasbro bought the line. And so this is two instances now where we never got a Rita figure. And it wasn't until Hasbro released a 2-pack of the wedding, like literally like celebrating their 25th anniversary of their marriage, that we got a Rita figure. So life works in very mysterious ways. You know,
I like how you're just holding it up to your camera where no one can see it.
I know. I had to bring it down anyways for you guys to see it. At the very least, you
brought
guys.
It to us to show for show and tell. Okay. Yes, he should take a picture of it and tweet it from our VFTG Twitter account.
I absolutely will. And I believe that this set's got, it's a GameStop exclusive, and I think it's marked down 25% if you want to pick it up right now.
But
my heart bleeds in Lightspeed Rescue.
I know.
Sorry, anytime anyone brings up the Lightning Collection, my heart bleeds in Lightspeed Rescue.
Yeah.
Or Jungle Fury, or any of the lines that don't have figures right now.
Yeah.
But I guess we just needed another Tommy.
And you know what sucks about that too is it looks like they're trying to complete Dino Thunder, and we only need yellow and black on that one. So
I'm okay with that because I actually quite like Dino Thunder.
I do too. So, but yeah, I hope that we get Lightspeed.
Sasha, all right. You're muted.
I was going to say, as fabulous as this conversation about the Lightning Collection is, do you guys have any final notes about the wedding?
My final note is, oh, look, it's literally 4 minutes from the end of the episode, and they've just summoned their Zords to fight five monsters. Where did all the tension go?
Huh? What?
You've got like this situation where they've got to fight four monsters, and it's like, well, there's only 5 minutes left in the episode. This isn't going to take long, yeah. Right? Like,
I have one last point.
Go for it, my dude.
And I don't. If we did bring it up, I apologize. Brain hurty, but I have a note here, and I'll just go ahead and read it the way I wrote it here. It says here, at the end of episode, the Rangers escape, leave on foot, and they head to the command center, being trailed by a handful of monsters, and are being watched by Rita and Zed and Serpentera. Here's my question: why doesn't Zed fire on the command center with Serpentera? He knows where it's located. Practically every villain at the moment is aware of its location. Why are they not storming the command center? The Rangers are at their most vulnerable, and their secret location isn't a secret anymore. Hell, D.Va talks when she learned of the command center's location at the end of Turbo. She wasted no time in sending in the troops, and they destroyed the place. What is stopping Zed and Rita?
Plot convenience.
At that point, they still had the whole you need a power coin to get into the command center thing.
Mm. I mean,
oh, well.
Yep. Anyway,
I think that's a great point to end this episode on.
Oh, yes.
It is. It's just like, oh, look, another plot hole. Well, must be Mighty Morphin.
Sorry about that. I figure Serpentera would be powerful enough to, like, at least put a hole in the thing.
Serpentera can't even, like, run its own Wi-Fi, my dude.
So with that, Brian, where can the people find you on social media?
Y'all can find me on Twitter at OneDrunkGeek, and you can also find me podcasting with the good folks over at Castwave Studios, where we do not only the titular show of One Drunk Geek, but we also do Boldly Going Nowhere.
All right, Ben.
What?
Socials?
Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so you can find me on Twitter at
Bob T. Goldfish.
You can find this show at
VFTG _PR.
You can find my scribblings of my journey through various Power Rangers seasons and my thoughts thereon over at
txhthockey.com/bens-journey.
Where I go season by season and break down my thoughts therein. I came to the decision today that I absolutely refuse to consider the Nickelodeon seasons as two separate seasons. Just won't do it. Just won't do it.
Yeah.
But I think we just, as of the time of recording at least, just released the Ninja Storm column today. Which has caused a little bit of a stir in my DMs. But that can be discussed later amongst ourselves. And you can find me doing the video game thing over at
twitch.tv/321_TV.
Yep, that's me.
Sasha?
And of course, you can find my lovely self on geekgirl101.tumblr.com, where I am still mourning the... dealing with the end of WandaVision, no spoilers.
Good.
I'm still dealing with the fallout as of the recording of this episode. You can find me on Geeky Kaplan on Twitter. Kaplan after the greatest superhero in the entire Marvel universe, Billy
me.
Kaplan.
No.
And of course, on geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com, I just posted my review this past Wednesday. The review of the King in Black tie-in focusing on Wiccan and Hulkling. Shocking to absolutely no one. It sucked. Thanks.
And they need to stop calling him Hulkling.
Need to stop calling him Wiccan too, but that's a separate conversation.
Yeah.
Michael, where can the people find you on those pesky social media things?
Twitter at @thelinmom75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75production, Twitch doing twitch.tv/themichaelx75, and website txhthockey.com, and for the show specific, VFTG. So with that, Ben, take us out.
I guess it's time to wrap up this episode. It has been an episode of plot weirdness and vulnerable moments. So I will merely say, guys, gals, and non-binary pals, in the words of the 16th president of these United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. Party on, non-gender specific honorifics.
And until next time, from all of us here at Voices from the Grid, be sure to grab your power coins and your power morphers.
And until our next more phenomenal episode, may the power protect you.
Dun, dun, dun! Doesn't do anything.